We acknowledge and we recognize that women are comparatively disadvantaged when it comes to opportunity and privileges and rights in almost all places in the world. So that's, first of all, a premise that we operate from, and that has obviously lots of ramifications, and it manifests itself in everything from employment to livelihoods to income to control of resources to dynamics, inter-family or inter-relationship dynamics to access to healthcare, which means that there's a tendency for women to be more vulnerable to the impact of disasters and take a longer time to recuperate or recover. So if you consider that, what type of legislation, policies, and programming do you put in place to respond to that? And that's where the risk reduction side of it comes in, is that you try to, prior to an event, address those issues so there's a proactive engagement with women, a proactive recognition of those comparatively greater vulnerability.
What practical examples can you cite from your work?
In the case of the Turks and Caicos Islands, we actually have the opposite taking place, where we do find that women and girls are empowered in disaster management. For example, our subcommittees that are set up to ensure that we are prepared to respond to various hazards, majority of them, over 90%, are chaired by female. So the needs of female and girls are not being neglected in disaster management in the Turks and Caicos Islands. What we have started doing in the Turks and Caicos Islands is the reverse, trying now to empower more men to take initiatives to lead the process, because the issue of empowerment should not be one versus the other. It shouldn't be female and girls over male and boys.
Is this really a cultural thing that, you know, that women tend to be the kind of the decision makers in households in Turks and Caicos?
I think in the case of Turks and Caicos Islands, recent initiative by the government in the past 15 years to proactively ensure that women are not disenfranchised in the social sectors, in disaster management, is what led to this. And so women have been empowered to the point where they're leaving the men counterparts behind, and the girls are following the female footstep and they're leaving the boys behind. What we are now doing in the Turks and Caicos Islands is trying to ensure this equity, not just for female, but to ensure we bring the male counterparts, the boys, along with us.
Some practical lessons then, perhaps, from the example here of the Turks and Caicos that could be applied elsewhere in the Americas and the Caribbean?
Oh, those are excellent examples. I mean, there seems to be some political will behind ensuring gender equality and gender equity. So I think the lesson to be learned is that there is a political will, which probably translates into very proactive, if not legislation, then policies and programming that has created space over the course of the last 15 years and then results in a situation. If you traditionally came from a situation where there was disadvantage and now that shifted, it's because there's a reason because it shifted. So I would just ask Vahini, what is the reason it shifted and what can we learn from that? We assume that that is a proactive approach by the government, and also not only the government, agencies and the civil society actors and community members who are advocating very strongly for proactive role of women, characteristics towards masculinity can put men at risk. Roles of being a provider or protector imply other levels of risk. So, you know, if the work that Vahini is doing in Turks and Caicos also implies that there is greater capacity and political will to address both the risks and the resilient factors for men, as well as the risks and resilience factors for women, all the more kudos to them.
And what are the UNDP's priorities in terms of correcting this inequality overall?
Well, we don't correct inequalities. We work with governments to help them be able to integrate better risk reduction policies so that there's a greater awareness of the need to have differential analysis. So there is a greater awareness of the need to ensure that their policies and their frameworks, their institutional frameworks, reflect gender, that there is a capacity at the government level, the national and the local government level, to address it.
And how useful are conferences like these to affecting change overall?
I think it's very effective, and it's having those conversations in the beginning that led to the change that we are experiencing right now. For example, last year, our cabinet, members of parliament, was over 60% females, and this year we have the first female premier, so it definitely speaks to the empowerment of women.
What's your biggest challenge that remains, just finally?
If we believe that we should have evidence-based programming and evidence-based policy, it means that efforts need to go into good data collection, which includes fields of data collection that looks at the different components, social components, that put individuals and communities at risk.